spooky friends. I'm John, your host, and welcome to another episode of Dairyland Frights, the paranormal podcast that covers everything spooky, creepy, and mysterious in the Midwest. And the great spooky guests continue. Tonight on the podcast, I have Megan, or Meg, from Paranormal with Meg. And she is a paranormal investigator, which I love to have on the show. If you listen as one of my spooky friends, know I love paranormal investigators. So, Meg, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. I am excited to have you. I tell all my spooky friends, I always look at my guests, and when I bring them on, I make sure I look at what they have out there. And Meg has some awesome paranormal investigations out there, and she does a great job. And like I tell all my spooky friends, you can see her on Instagram or wherever. I will put that in the episode notes so you can check her out and make sure you give her a little ghost love, as I like to say. So Meg, let me ask you this. First question, it would be, what got you into the paranormal?
So I have experienced ghosts from a very young age. My grandmother's house was very haunted, and I've had a lot of unexplained things happening while I was growing up. And it used to actually scare me a lot, and I actually couldn't even watch horror movies because it would scare me so much. And eventually I just kind of accepted that this is just part of my life. And I got super into watching different paranormal shows. Decided to try it out for myself almost exactly a year ago today, and now I'm hooked and I can't stop.
Great. Now let me ask you this, Megan. Did it happen? Do you want me to call you Megan or Meg? Which do you prefer?
Either one is fine.
All right. Great. So I'll call you Meg. Meg, let me ask you this. Was that happening when you were younger, or when did you start having these paranormal experiences?
The first I can really remember is when I was a teenager. I think I was about 17. But I have always been sort of sensitive to my environment and been creeped out by certain places, including my grandmother's house. So even though I didn't really witness an entity or anything until I was a teenager, I am pretty aware that there was something there my whole entire life of her living in her house.
Great. So tell me about your first paranormal experience. Was it a ghost on your bed? Did something walk through a wall? What happened?
So it was pretty intense for a first ghost experience. I was laying in bed and it was 2 a.m. because when you're 17, you stay up all night. And my room was always freezing cold. So I was under the blankets. I have 2 cats. And, you know, you're just looking up at the ceiling. And a totally pitch black, like almost dark matter black entity or a shadow person went right across my ceiling and into the next room, which was my brother's room. And one of my cats followed it and jumped up on my dresser and watched it go up through the ceiling into the other room. So I knew I wasn't just seeing things. My cat fully saw it too. And I was so terrified. I didn't sleep all night. And I told my grandmother the next day and then my dad. And he said he was terrified to hear that. So that was a really scary first paranormal experience for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds terrifying, especially when you're younger and something like that happens. And we'll talk about this different ghosts and everything here. That's one topic tonight. But let me ask you this. When that happened, did you feel like something was in the house? Did you know maybe someone died in the house? You guys maybe lived on, God forbid, an Indian burial ground or something like that?
Yeah, this is actually back in North York, Ontario, Canada. North York is a part of Toronto, Canada. Yeah. And that house was built, I believe, in the 1940s. And so it was an old house, but I don't know the history of it. And both my dad and my grandmother don't know the history of it either. So I honestly don't know what was there before. But like I said, my room was always freezing cold. I always felt very uneasy and uncomfortable in there. And it was so cold that my grandmother actually had the wall torn up and re-insulated, and it didn't change anything. So wow. I definitely think there was something there for sure. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And that is something that I hear a lot that happens to younger people. I've had people tell me they've been as young as 4 and they see a man pass right through their wall and they're like 4 years old and they tell their mom and their mom's like, oh, honey, you know, you're 4 years old. You didn't see it. And then later, like one of my guests said, when she turned 18, her mom just spilled the beans, per se, just like, yep, it's haunted. Yes, we have spirits. Yes, this is true. And yes, you know, and like, she was like, I was kind of grateful my mom waited to tell me that when I was older than I was 4 years old, because she said she would feel stuff in her closet. Did you ever feel anything like that? Did you think something was in your closet? Oh, so you kind of grew up in that. I like all of my guests seem to have grown up in it, except me, which is I grew up knowing my mom liked the paranormal and she would read certain things and she was never shy away from telling me, oh, what do you want to know about this? And what do you want to know about that? So my mom was very open. And then I tell people too, my grandma had this creepy old farmhouse in the middle of Iowa that was like out of here. Like, just think of a creepy old horror movie farmhouse. That was my grandma's. And, you know, when you're 16, 17, like yourself, you kind of like, you know, you're in footsteps and you hear all this stuff. I was said, getting back to what I was saying just really quickly, so I have an editing point. You know, my grandma's house was really creepy was the fact that one time a door opened and there was nobody there. And then when I asked my grandma and stuff, she was like, oh, it's an old house and this happens all the time. But I kind of felt like, I don't know, because I kept on hearing footsteps and just, it was just very, very strange, you know. And that was really my first paranormal experience too, of knowing exactly what's going on. So, you know, you kind of grow from there. And that's, I guess, my love for it. But you just have done investigations fairly recently, correct?
Yes, correct. Within about a year now.
Yeah. And now, who got you into that? When did you decide, hey, I want to give this a try?
So both my husband are super into it. He is the one who's always with me. He's just not a social media guy, so he doesn't appear in really anything. But he and I both love paranormal investigation shows, and we'd been watching them for years and years and years. The apartment that we used to live in when we were still living in Canada was also pretty haunted. So eventually we just decided, hey, let's try this out. So we went with a group and a friend that's here in Florida where I live now.
Nice. Now, you said, before we get to some of the investigations, you said your current house is haunted. Is that correct?
For it to fall over, it would have had to physically have been pushed. So that was really strange. And because that sort of felt a little bit aggressive to me, I staged the house and, that stopped after that. But there's also been times where my husband's monitors for his work computer, since he works from home, have turned on in the middle of the night randomly. So it's mostly like they just like to turn on things that I think they believe the light will wake us up and give them attention. That's my thought process around it. And usually I'll tell them, you can't do this. This is my house. You can be here if you want, but you can't be messing around with my things and waking us up at night. So that's kind of what we deal with over here.
That's always funny to me that when you're talking to ghosts, you got to talk to them almost like you're talking to little children, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, hey, stop that. You know, I don't appreciate it. Rather than yell and scream at them and say whatever, right?
I talk to them with a stern voice for every time. Like, you can't do this in my house anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things that I see some different investigators doing different things where I don't know why they want to yell at the ghosts and everything. So let me ask you this, Meg, with your investigating, Tell me about how you investigate. Like, when you go, do you do mostly like cemeteries, homes? What do you mostly do?
Right now, it's cemeteries or any haunted places that we can get into. Sometimes we go with another paranormal group who has a lot of connections and gets us into places. So, for example, we've been to the Arcadia Opera House, which is in Arcadia, Florida. Oh, nice. Super haunted location. And the other day, actually, we just went to Lemon Bay Historical Cemetery, which is here in Southwest Florida. And it's in Englewood, Florida. And that place is crazy. Like, the baseline for the K2 meter basically was fluctuating between green and yellow the whole time. So it was really strange being like that when we're amongst the graves and everything. But as soon as we left, the baseline went back to that first green there. So just a very charged place. And they loved the REM pod. They just wanted to continuously talk to us using the REM pod over and over and over and beeping it and acknowledging their presence through that. So that's where we've been looking around lately. And our next step is to go to a very haunted inn here in Ocala, Florida. It's called Seven Sisters Bed and Breakfast. So we're really looking forward to that because that's going to be completely like a new environment for us. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, nice. And so you talked about the REM pad. Is that correct?
REM pod.
REM pod. So what exactly is that?
So the REM pod is one that I have is custom made, but basically it's a device designed for paranormal research, and it has the ability to read the different temperature and then electromagnetic fields in the area. So it has like an antenna that spirits can go in and touch, or if they're around it nearby, then it picks up on their energy in theory. And it beeps in different ways, and it has different colors depending on the different, I guess, areas that they're lighting up on the REM pod. But it basically is radiating electromagneticity, and it is just what the spirits can use to either highlight their temperature changes in the area when they're nearby, or it detects their electromagnetic field.
Oh, great. So let's get behind the scenes here a little bit and tell me about one of your creepiest or spookiest investigations.
It's kind of difficult to say because I don't get creeped out. I just get like really excited. I think that in I think Arcadia Opera House was really creepy. There's all these different little rooms in there that they have upstairs where the theater is. And then you can also go behind the stage. And there was a pretty significant amount of damage there because of Hurricane Ian. So we didn't get to explore all the areas, but there's very validating responses there. So we were using the SLS detector to try to see if we could find, I guess, the shape of the spirit to show that there was somebody there. It detects any humanoid form. And it came up with the little guy up in the rafters behind the stage, and also on the I'm having a moment on the SB7, which is a modified radio that you can speak to spirits from. It rapidly scans through different radio stations. And the theory
like
is that the spirits,
box, right?
Spirit box. The spirits can go in and speak through that. So on there, we asked what his name was. He said his name was Vlad, and we asked what he was doing. He said he was working, and he was up in the rafters behind the stage. So I guess he's just there still working. And in the music room, we connected with a spirit named Wayne, who didn't really have a whole lot to say, but I did feel the sensation of him touching my leg, which he had acknowledged that he did. So that was pretty weird too. He also waved to us on the SLS when we asked him to. So that was a really unique and interesting piece of evidence. Yeah, that was really cool.
Now back up a second. You asked Dwayne, you said, did you touch my leg? And Did you have an EVP of him saying, yes, Megan, I touched your leg?
So it's usually pretty challenging for spirits to get a prolonged sentence because they are speaking to you between the different radio scans on the spirit box. But I said, who was touching my leg? And we just heard me. And I said, well, who's me? And they said, yeah. Wayne. So piecing that together, it seems like Wayne touched my leg. And that's how we put that together there.
Yeah. And I always kid paranormal investigators. Not like, you know, you're going to have someone be like, hey, Megan, I touched your leg. And, you know, are you married? like, what? What's going on here? You know? So the Arcadia Opera House, that is like a lot of, well, opera houses or places similar to that, theaters, who have a lot of activity in there. And when it does, you said you saw, how many spirits you think you saw? It sounds like two or three, at least. Am I right on that?
I saw two on the SLS camera, and I am pretty sensitive, so I can sometimes see a spirit when they go by very quickly. Usually for me, it's a black or a white, or sorry, a black or a gray mist. Sure. So I did see that kind of go in front of a door right in front of where I was sitting. But there's definitely dozens and dozens of spirits. Across the street, there's an old brothel that wives got really pissed off about and burnt down. So you have sort of different layers of things going on there. You know, you get lots of like a lot of vulgarities coming through, you know, so that's pretty interesting too. The spirits have a little bit of a dirty mind over there. And then also there was someone who hung themselves in that opera house and a little girl who fell out the top story window and died. So there's a lot of layers, and I feel as though there are dozens and dozens of spirits there all doing different things.
Sure. Sure. And the reason I laugh at brothels is because it's like usually a lot of the old theaters, homes, bars, whatever you want to say, was a brothel at one time. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like a barbershop, bar, brothel, restaurant. You know what I'm saying? And it's just because that's the way it was, right? I mean, to attract, I'm a big history guy, and to attract the workers, you needed a brothel, right?
Right.
That's where men, you know, men wanted to frequent. But I got to look up that story about wives burning down a brothel. I've never heard of that before. And that is awesome.
Yeah. They were super pissed. Their husbands were just, you know, fooling around behind their back and burn down the brothel. So there's a lot of different things that come through with that. You get fire a lot on like the ovulus or spirit box. So it's pretty interesting to have that, even though it was across the street.
Yeah, right. So have you ever had an investigation where you felt sick or the teams all felt sick or nauseous and you had to say, guys, I got to take a break and I got to get some air? Has that ever happened?
Not to the point of feeling nauseous that I needed to take a break. Definitely that I needed to sit down. Arcadia Opera House is like that. It's very draining. When we did the Estes method, which is when you're blindfolded, listening to the spirit box with headphones, so it blocks out all other sensations. Yeah. There was a spirit simultaneously whispering beside my ear, and I could feel them like touching my hair here. And it was very jarring, and my heart started pounding in my chest, which is not a common thing for me during investigations. Right. And it felt so unsettling, especially when in the spirit box, they had said heartbeat. So I had to stop at that point. Yeah. It made my heart pound so hard that I had to stop. So that's probably the most unsettling experience I've ever had, is having that feeling. And I do believe that they created that feeling for me.
Oh, wow. So my next question would be, has a spirit or entity ever attached itself to you or member of the team and you brought them home with you?
I believe I have something attached to me and always have. I don't think that it does anything. I think that they're just around. And the first time I ever used a spirit box myself here, it was a male spirit that did confirm that they're with me. I asked them different dates and time periods that they could have become attached to me, but they didn't acknowledge when. Also, when we had the TV turn on and my husband's computer monitors turn on, we did a spirit box session and there was a really angry spirit who was attached to my husband. So that's when I just staged the house and we haven't seen from him since or anything. So nothing, you know, malicious, malevolent, demonic, anything like that, but definitely just tricksters or crusty, cranky spirits, I guess.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. That's good to hear. Have you ever either two been in a room, and I've had some paranormal investigators tell me this, where they're in a room and there's, they don't, I don't know what to say, don't see anything or whatever, but they just feel something and they're like, let's leave. We got to leave like right now. And everybody's like, okay. And has that ever happened?
Not to the point where I wanted to leave, but feeling very unsettled. Again, Arcadia Opera House, there's just so many things there. In the bottom level, they're doing renovations. And it's said to be where that child spirit is, the one that fell out of the window. And we were talking in there and I felt pretty dizzy and I had a headache. And I also felt something touch the back of my leg. And we got an EVP on our digital recorder asking what their name was. And it was a very distinct childlike whisper saying either Cassandra or Amanda. But the feeling in there was very unsettling. And we went back to the Opera House a second time and back into that area. And it was still very unsettling. And the spirits were setting off, you know, cat balls, which will light up with physical touch. And that particular spot has a very just unsettling, uncomfortable vibe.
Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, that sounds like a lot of activity, a lot of different spookiness and creepiness with it too. So, you know, the last thing is, do you guys ever do any house investigation?
Not as of yet. I would love to eventually start to do that. But since we're just starting off, I think right now we're just gathering evidence. We do have a lot of interest in eventually being able to go into private residences and helping people who specifically say, I have this going on. Can you tell me what's happening here? But for right now, it's a pretty decent hobby that we're investing a lot of time and energy into. And it's going to stay that way for a little bit while we continue to explore everything Florida has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. Because I know, too, you want to debunk it, too, if you would go into a house and be like, I'm sorry, guys, it's your furnace. That's like the weird noises or air conditioning system if you're in Florida. Your air conditioner or your central air, you know, you might want to get that fixed. That's what's making the howling noises at night. You don't have a ghost. Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, you have to keep me up to date on that and let me know, because I know it's a mixed bag for paranormal investigators. They spend a lot of time and money and they go out there. It's hard to charge someone if they're saying, I'm really scared. This is scaring my daughter. This is scaring my little boy. This is, and you're like, well, okay, I'm not. Do I charge you? No, I kind of feel bad. You know what I mean? So you got to kind of be like, yeah, let me help and see what I can do. So awesome.
Exactly.
Well, I love all those stories. Oh, man. So let's get into our topic for tonight, Megan, because one of the things I was like looking at here and I was saying, I've talked to a lot of paranormal investigators, but I don't know any idea about the type of ghost. And what you guys are looking for, what you guys discover. So I'm going to go through the number of ghosts and then you can comment on it. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you don't want to see it. Maybe you do. By the way, my favorite is the poltergeist. Just because I'm so interested in how that works. Because, you know, there's residual hauntings, which is basically, you know, really quickly is like at 3 a.m. your door opens and there's a little girl standing there, and it happens 3 a.m. like clockwork. And there's intelligent hauntings where you get up in the morning, like you said, there's a trickster, and you try to grab your car keys, and now your car keys are like in the kitchen dishwasher, and you're like, ah, man, come on. What are you doing? You're killing me over here, dude. or ghost, to the matter, or spirit. So let's get into the first one. The first type of ghost, and there's many different ones, but these are the main ones. It's called the interactive personality. This is the most common of all ghosts, and it's usually as a deceased person, obviously. So someone you know, a family member, or perhaps or even a historical figure. These ghosts can be friendly or not, but often show themselves in a variety of ways. They can become visible, they can speak or make noises, touch you, or even emit an odor like a perfume or cigar smoke, etc., to let you know they are here. Experts say that this type of ghost retains the form of personality, what they were alive, and can feel emotions, which is, I'd love to hear your take on that. And often they are visiting you to comfort you, which is a good thing, or let you know something's important. So if you happen to see a lost loved one, chances are they're because they feel or want to tell you something, or you need to see them for whatever reason. So I know you're just really early into it. Have you ever had that happen? Well, kind of with Dwayne, right? Dwayne told you in so much certain terms, you know, being around and stuff like that. But is there any other ghosts you've met like that, or a loved one that's kind of just come out and just like, whatever, told you a message of it? You know, he felt better after, you know, you told him about everything.
So after we explained that he was deceased, the second time we connected with him, he was back to his sort of happy-go-lucky self. He was a very upbeat person who always had a smile on his face and always had something to say. So it was definitely nice to hear him sort of being back to his old self. We use this app called Ghost Tube Vox. I think that it adds a lot more clarity than Spirit Box. Because of all the, you know, sound between the radio stations and the static. And this one, like, I've had so many validating answers that I completely believe in the validity of this app. So I purchased it. But anyway, I digress. We've also connected with my husband's father numerous times. Both of my grandparents, I used, an old birthday card that I had from my grandmother that, she wrote to me years ago, and I asked her, what is this? And she said birthday, and there was no way for that to ever, you know, be replicated or something strange to come through. And she was from Finland. She had a Finnish accent, and it came through with her Finnish accent as well. So that was probably one of the most incredible pieces of evidence I've ever had.
That is awesome. I love that story. So, you know, again, my mom died like 3 years ago, and, you know, I still like, and I don't feel weird about saying this. I talk to my mom, and, you know, and I'll say like, hey, mom, you know, I love you. I'm going through this or whatever. And I do feel like she's there, and, you know, I can't really prove it or anything. But you know, I just feel like she's watching me, and she's kind of like, okay, you're going to be fine and everything. Cause my mom was a very positive person, and she never let anything, really upset her. But near the end there, she was going through so much pain. To get a little side note there, you know, I was kind of like, man, come on. Why was this happening? But she went to a better place, and, you know, I know she's so much better. So I love it, you know? So let's go to the next one. Number two, the ectoplasm or ecto mist. Ever seen a mist or fog that almost looks like it's swirling? If so, you may be and what witnessing what paranormal investigators deem as an ectomist or a ghostly mist. These vaporous clouds usually appear several feet off the ground and can move swiftly or simply stay still, almost like it's orbiting. These ghostly encounters have been captured on many videos and photographs and can be white, gray, or even black. Although they can simply appear this way, they linger and move away quickly. Sometimes ectoplasms appear before becoming a full-bodied apparition. Many people have witnessed them outdoors, in graveyards, battlefields, and historical sites. So, have you seen an ectomist?
I have not seen anything swirling or anything that has been a mist and then manifested into, you know, a full person or a misty person. The only thing that I have seen is just a mist that came up from behind a tree, which I have a capture of. And because I am spiritually sensitive, I do see different mists going by in my house all the time, every day, basically.
Oh, wow. That's now being sensitive for my spooky friends. You are not a seer. You are just, you can pick up spirits and kind of the, I hate to use the word vibe, but how would you explain it? How do you pick that up?
I get a sensation and I almost know where they are without having any explanation for it. So when I did capture that mist on my camera, I kept turning my head in the same direction over and over. And when I took the picture, that's where the mist was. And I just knew something was there. Similarly, in my house, I always know that there is something around my desk. And one time we put the REM pod there and the REM pod went ballistic. So we do know that there is definitely something just kind of swirling about here in our house somewhere for whatever reason.
Okay, that is scary and frightens me. Thank you very much. Now I won't sleep tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
I do not have a pod or pad or nothing that I, you know. Great. that's really interesting, though. I know there's a lot of videos, and I know you're this way, too. All my paranormal investigators are this way. Where they fake it on a video and someone's just off screen with a stupid fog machine or something. Oh, look at that mess on. Or it's foggy, right? It's like in Florida, just like in Wisconsin in the summertime, you get that kind of mist and you're like, oh, look, there's a mist. And then,
it's
just humidity, buddy.
Yes.
right? And it kind of sucks because you're like, I'm trying to prove something here and you're just, you and your buddy with a your iPhone is trying to make us look like, you know, whatever, right? So,
yeah,
it's really hard to prove that. And one of the other things I'll talk about here is another hard thing to prove. And I've gotten to arguments about these next two, not bad arguments, Meg. I'm not getting into fights, so don't worry.
That's good.
So the next thing is the poltergeist. Now that's like my favorite. Perhaps one of the most popular terms most of us have heard, right? The movies, poltergeists, and all that good stuff. There's a whole bunch of ton of stuff on YouTube. You can go down a rabbit hole looking at all the stuff that's out there involving poltergeist. So the word poltergeist actually means noisy ghost, which I love that, noisy ghost, because it is said to have the ability to move or knock things over, make noise, and manipulate the physical environment. While many of us have heard the term before, a poltergeist is actually one of the rarest forms of hauntings, and to many, the most terrifying. Loud knocking sounds, lights turning on and off, doors slamming, even fires breaking out mysteriously have all been attributed to this type of spiritual disturbance. Another frightening aspect of the poltergeist is the event that usually starts out slowly and mildly and then becomes to intensify. And while many times poltergeist activity is harmless and ends quickly, they have been known to have become dangerous. And some experts explain it as a mass form of energy that a living person is controlling unknowingly. Whatever the case may be, poltergeists have caught the attention of paranormal enthusiasts and experts, scientists, and many others for just plain curious. So, have you ever witnessed a poltergeist? You kind of, a little bit, yeah. Right? We're those sneaky guys. But why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, kind of with the weird things that happen here, there was one time at 1 a.m, my bedroom closet door opened. And we keep it closed all the time because my cats will go in there and rummage around. So it was definitely closed. And the weirdest part of it is the door creaked when it opened. And I tried to replicate that over and over and over. And the door does not creak. It never creaks. I have never heard that door creak ever. And so the next day I asked with my ghost tube app, who opened this door last night, and a spirit came through saying acknowledge. So for me, that was a very creepy poltergeist incident. Yeah. And that was something that I saged the house for, because not staying here. Nope. Otherwise, you know, like I had said before, turning on the TV, my husband's computer monitors, knocking over my lamp. That's right. Pretty much the extent of what I've seen in terms of poltergeist. And in my personal opinion, I think that there is definitely a spectrum of power that different entities have. I think when a spirit is malicious, malevolent, potentially demonic, what they do as far as poltergeist activity exists purely to terrorize a human being to the point that they are able to feed off the fear. And I think that that's when there's situations where it can escalate to even being violent and having things thrown, you know, like how you had said, the violent knocking, screaming sounds, whipping things open, slamming doors, etc. For me, that's very aggressive behavior. And I don't think that that's necessarily the same as, you know, the spirit that I have in my house, for example. So I do think there are different levels of poltergeist that exist in our world.
Absolutely. And here's something crazy that I kind of experienced a little bit. I can't tell you. If you were my neighbor, Megan, I would have you come over and check out my house at the time and tell me what was going on. So my daughter, she's about 15. She was going through a lot in her life. I won't get into it. Just a lot for a teenager to go through. And it was really sad. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. I don't want to depress people, but it was really sad. And I noticed there was like a darkness over the house. And I would be downstairs. And this has happened once. And I swear to God, somebody came in my ear and said, John. Like standing right next to me, right? And I was like, oh, okay, I'm tired, whatever. And then another time I was sleeping down on my I have a little futon, so I take a little nap sometimes, and I was sleeping there, and I felt someone, you know how people take their fingers and kind of you may do this to your husband, have a little fun with them, take your fingers and rub them on his back, right?
Yeah,
like that to wake him up or just have a little fun with him. That's what I felt. And I thought it was my wife. And I go, hon, I'm really tired. What's going on, hon? And I look, nobody's there. Now, when my daughter went to a therapist and she got the help she needed, thank goodness, the darkness seemed to go away. I didn't hear any weird voices. I didn't feel any touches. And they say, whether you believe it or not, that teenage girls, and I'll get into this in a little bit, those are the one that poltergeists focus on. Like, teenage girls admit this poltergeist activity. It's fascinating to me. I don't know if you've heard anything like that at all, Megan, or stories you've read regarding that.
I have not heard of that, but that makes total and complete sense to me. You know, women in general are typically more emotional. And when you're a teenage girl, you're going through a lot. And at 15, I imagine she was going through a lot. So it's almost like you're in a more vulnerable state, especially if you're going through puberty and you're experiencing all these different things happening. I wouldn't be surprised if there are spirits who attach themselves to that, mm-hmm. or who feed off that kind of energy and create a more negative space and feed off of that as well. So that's just me thinking out loud. I'm not saying this is true or not, but that makes complete sense to me. And I would 100% believe that if somebody told that to me. And your story makes total sense.
Yeah. It's just fascinating to me that, you know, a lot of people too, who say they're going through a tough time, they feel, you know, they wake up and they're like, you know, and who knows what's going on, but they feel darkness. They feel something's going on. And that's a lot of the videos. You'll see some videos of the guy who talked about, he was just going through a lot. And then he'd get home and his kitchen would be like destroyed. And he thought,
yeah,
something's going on here. Like someone busted in, was trying to get something. So you put a camera up thinking someone's breaking into his apartment. And then you would see, like, again, believe it or not, it's totally up to you. You would see the cupboard doors opening and a dish fly out. And then you would see another cupboard door open and then other things fly out. And I'm like, if this guy's doing this, wow, okay. I don't know what attention you're going to get, how much money you're going to make off of this, but all right. You know, but he'd say he all the time. And then he would you'd see him come home from work. I should put the video up. I'll define it. It's a really old video. And he would come home and you'd see him just stand there and just like, God damn, you know, what's going on here? So believe it or not, I don't know what that might be. But I just find poltergeists interesting for all the different things. Even scientists study this to try to figure out what is going on. So this is the one that I debate all the time. Orbs. So orbs are probably the most photographed type of anomaly. They appear as a transparent or translucent ball of light that is hovering over the ground or just around, right? It could be in your house, it could be in a cemetery, it could be whatever. Most ghost hunters and guests, and this is one, there was this one on ghosts and gravestones is where I got this information from, are surprised to see them in their photos. So you take a photo and you're like, whoa, okay, what's that? It is believed that orbs are the soul of a human or even an animal that has died and is traveling around from one place to another. The circular shape that takes on makes it easier for them to move around and is often the first state they appear in before they become a full-bodied apparition. If you're lucky enough to capture an orb video, you'll be amazed how fast they can move. In photographs, they were usually white and could be as blue as well. So, Megan, have you seen any orbs?
I have not personally, but I have seen lots of footage of orbs. I will say that most of the time I am an orb skeptic. However, there is undeniable evidence that I have seen, particularly if there's thermal camera and that orb emits either heat or complete lack thereof. That's pretty compelling for me because dust and a bug won't do that. Or if it moves in a way that dust simply cannot, almost intelligently. I saw a video one time of an orb that moved into a toy and then the toy started to make sound like a child's toy. And then another one moved into another toy and that toy started to make sound. So because there was the two, for me, that couldn't just be coincidence. So, you know, there are shows that I've seen where there's investigators and in every single episode, they're like, this orb went into this guy. And then he started to, you know, go crazy and all this other stuff. I'm like, okay, well, this doesn't happen every time. Every episode can't be this way. Right, so that's when I'm a skeptic. But you know, I am open to anything being possible. And I do believe that there are indeed orbs that are really actually the souls of the departed.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the reason I said I get into it is because you'll see a lot of people and there's no orbs. Someone did a study out there and they said 90 to 95% of orbs are just dust particles, pollen particles, you know, and people get all excited about, oh, I put this camera out last night because I keep hearing the door opening in my living room and I put it out there. And then you see the dog. I have two cats and a dog and you know you see the dog and the cat opening the door and then they come and you're like all right, there you go, that's your orb. And I get into it. And some people online, when I've gotten into it, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And la, 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 la. I'm like, great. Believe what you want to believe. I'm not going to, mm-hmm. you know, put you down for whatever. I'm totally out for it. I'm just kind of like,
yeah.
Most people,
you're entitled to believe whatever you want to believe. Correct. And, you know, absolutely. I fully accept your beliefs. You don't have to accept mine. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next one is funnel ghosts, which I've never heard of this one. Mm-hmm. They're most often spotted in homes or old historical buildings. The funnel ghost or vortex is frequently associated with a cold spot. And then I'm like, oh, okay, now I know. They usually take on the shape of a swirling funnel. Again, I've never heard of this one. And most paranormal experts believe they are, again, a loved one returning for a visit or even a former resident of the home, appearing as a wisp of light or swirling spiral of light. They're often caught in a photograph or on video. So have you ever seen that little wisp of light, little swirl of light?
I have not. I've seen photos of it. And this is also something where I am skeptical, because with, you know, CGI and AI and all the editing possibilities that we have now, it is pretty easy to manipulate a photograph. Mm-hmm. However, because I do believe anything is possible, for me, I wonder if those are like very special interactions, potentially like, you know, an angelic interaction, sure. you know, someone who's watching over you, protecting you, because for me, it's just like such an unusual phenomenon that I mm-hmm. almost think that it is something that's almost holy. And again, it's whatever your beliefs are, but that's how it feels to me. But I would love to see that. I just never have, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are really interesting ones. But the one thing, again, I wanted to focus on here is, like I said, the poltergeist.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, it comes from two German words, and I'm part German, by the way.
Oh, so am I.
Hey!
Yes.
Let's put on our lederhosen and do a little dance.
Perfect.
Have some beer. All right. So two German words. First word is poltern, and my German is rusty. Please excuse me. Mm-hmm. Which means crash, and geist, which means spirit or go. So in other words, like I said, a noisy or unruly ghost. We already talked about that. But one of the things, I didn't know this, they've been around since the first century. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Like, there's been reports of poltergeist activity going back to the first century. And so in modern times, a lot of the phenomenon has been generated, like I said, major films, television programs. You can find it anywhere. Go on YouTube, go down that rabbit hole. But this is something very interesting that I never knew. First thing is, parapsychologists, Meg, don't or can't agree on what they are. So mm-hmm. some parapsychologists view poltergeists as a type of a ghost, supernatural entity, which are responsible for physiological and physical disturbance. Other believes that this is some type of unknown energy associated with a living person or a location. Skeptics, mm-hmm. on the other hand, prefer mundane explanations such as attention-seeking, pranks, trickery, which I thought was really interesting that no one can agree with this. Right? I don't know what that really means. This is my favorite one, and I'm sorry, Meg. Poltergeists tend to prefer women to men. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're always going to for women. So what they are is, their person-focused poltergeist tends to, but not always, involve a female adolescent who is suffering from emotional turmoil, which I talked about with my daughter. So when mm-hmm. the activity begins, that said, however, it's not all what they saw. Focal agents are teenagers. So they don't say it's always has to be a teenager. It can be, well, unfortunately, you, Meg. Let's say you're going through some stuff. William J. Roll, a pioneer in poltergeist research, found the age of people reporting experiences of poltergeist range from 8 years old all the way to 78 years old. That's a pretty, pretty wide.
That's a pretty broad range. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking 70 years? So they talk about, you know, it starts with little kids, mostly women, typically in the teenage range where it seems to, advance or accelerate. But there has been stories of people in, I just read a story, which is fascinating, about this woman who was in a retirement community. And she would, they would go into the retirement community and she'd be bruised. Like she got into a fight, right? And, you know, it went around, oh, you know, somebody's abusing her. We're going to put cameras in this room because we're going to catch the person. And we're not going to tell them we're putting cameras in this room. We're going to put it in there so we can catch this person beating the crap out of a grandma. I mean, like, what are you doing?
God.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So they put it in there and nothing and nothing, 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 nothing. And then the older woman keeps getting bruised and stuff. And they're like, okay, she must be doing it to herself. You know, something's going on. We're missing something. So they restrain this poor woman. Okay. Guess what? She still had bruises on her eyes, arms, chest. Like someone's hitting her, like physically just beating the ever living crap out of her. And she came and she finally just said, there's a demon poltergeist in here that is hurting me. And you've got to get me out of this room. And of course, you have Alzheimer's, whatever, right? We're not, I don't believe you. So finally, she was getting beaten so bad, they're like, get her out. We move her. And they move people in, and the same thing would happen.
Wow.
Men, women, didn't matter. Did come out of their bruised. And, you know, people, there was lawsuits involved. I'll try to find this story. There were lawsuits involved because they thought these people were, you know, the children were coming in saying, hey, you know, I'm going to sue you guys. You're beating my grandma, grandpa up, you know, and they're like, no, look at the footage. And so they look at the footage. No, nothing. They would, you know, everything. It was just crazy. So again, it can happen at any age. Now, here's the thing. Some of the best poltergeist stories are fakes, which really sucks because it would be really fun to have this. So one of my favorite ones is in 1967 at a lawyer's office in Rosenheim, Germany. Strange things started to happen in the presence of this 19-year-old secretary, Anna Marie. And paintings overhead, light fittings would start swinging. So these paintings would start swinging in the office. Light fittings start going. Why fluorescent tubes unscrewed themselves and massive spikes in electricity occurred. And the speaking clock was also multiple times per minute would just kind of spin. And it would just go off, you know, like a cuckoo clock. So it would just keep going. And furniture would be moved. So the police, the utility company, physicists, and parapsychologists, Hans Bender, investigated without explanation. But many believe it was fake, all due to hidden nylon threads, especially given that the incident stopped when Schreibel, her name was Anna Marie Schreibel, left the firm in early 1968. And so what they're saying is that they saw these threads. Now, that to me, this doesn't make sense, Megan. They put these threads up, and she was manipulating, like shaking the figure, shaking the pictures, moving the paintings. But then this is why they say they're fake, because after she left, nothing happened.
Yeah.
But there's stories where the poltergeist centers on one person, you know, as their
personal attachment.
So you don't know. It could have been that. It could have been why she was faking it. Why would a secretary fake poltergeist activity?
I know. That's really weird.
That doesn't make sense to me. There's a lot of minor and isolated incidents too. That includes things like you said, your keys or your phone moving to unusual places. Usually people say that's due to, you know, you just forget it because you're tired and you put your keys over there. And and also, it's typically, this is the good news. I guess it's good news. Typical poltergeist activity only lasts around 5 months. Okay, I don't know if you can take 5 months of someone messing with you really badly. Okay.
Yeah.
But some cases have persisted several years. So,
yeah,
again, you don't know. So here's one for you, Megan, because you used to live in Canada. Maybe you heard about this. Probably not. This was done in the 50s, but who knows? So help me out with this. It's a Chilliwack. Okay. Chilliwack poltergeist.
Correct. Yep. Chilliwack. Uh-huh. Yep.
There we go. Yay. In Canada, for example, was active for only 2 months between 1951 and 1952. During this time, the poltergeist produced loud and violent hammerings on the walls, accompanied by occasional flying objects. The brother, Dolly case, on the other hand, included a range of phenomena, stains, carvings of images, of Welsh words, generally of religious nature, and these persisted for several years. So there's two different things in here that I guess happened in Canada around this time. One was there was like these tamarines on the walls, and both happened in the 50s. And there was just these, you know, constant hammerings, and then objects would fly out. And of course, this is the 50s, so they really have no, you know, unless they took pictures, which I do not think they did. There's no way to prove it, right? The other case is, like I said, this one's an interesting one. And like I said, it's called the Brother, I believe, Dolly, D-O-L-I. You can pronounce it out of the way you want. And what that was really weird one that happened around that area, too, was there were carvings on the walls of, like, Welsh words. And no one knew how to speak Welsh. Like, old, like, carvings of old language of Welsh. Generally of a religious nature, so there would be like all these crosses and all this weird, like, for lack of a better word, like Latin phrases. It wasn't Latin, it was in Welsh, so nobody could speak Welsh. And so they were like, wait a minute, I can't speak Welsh, I don't even know how to do this. And they would appear on the walls and they paint over it, I guess. And I just did a little flyover of this case, and it was just weird. They paint over it, come back again. They would paint over it, come back again, and they were just like, I have no idea what's going on with this. So, and that's kind of an unusual case that they thought was fake, but then when they interviewed people, like I said, they didn't know, I don't know how to speak Welsh, I don't know anything about this. This is from, like, you know, the 5th century or something like that. Like, how would I know that, you know? So I thought that was kind of an interesting one. But the most famous one was, and you probably heard of this one. If you haven't, look it up. There's enough stuff on this. They even made a Conjuring movie, The Enfield Poltergeist. I believe that was Conjuring 2. Yeah. And that one was crazy. Oh, there you go. By the way, my favorite movie is The Conjuring movie. So one of the most famous cases involved the Hodgson family in the UK, and that was in Enfield, as you know, between 1977 and 79. It was a scene of demonic voices and strange noises. And again, watch the Conjuring movies or read about it. There's plenty of stuff on there. Happened to the two teenage daughters, Margaret and Janet. There's some famous pictures about the show's levitation, strange noises. And, you know, that's an episode, you know, I can do, or anyone could do with them. And like I said, there's been several people who went in there and investigated it and were like, yeah, this is true. And then they caught the girl, if you know, also in the Conjuring movie, as well as you can read about it. One of the girls, I believe it was Janet, I'm not really sure, I'll go back. She was throwing stuff around in the kitchen one day and she was just freaking out. And people caught her. And they said, there you go. It's her.
Yeah.
He's doing all this stuff. But there was too many things I can't get into. That's a whole episode of what was going on. So you said, what did you think of that, the Enfield poltergeist?
You know, it kind of like makes me think of, you know, the Fox sisters and how it was sort of like a phenomenon that went on and everybody thought like, this is revolutionary. They can connect with spirits in this way. And more activity was drummed up from more and more people. And then later in life, one of the sisters said on their deathbed that she made it all up and it was them cracking their knuckles and stomping their feet, etc. So, you know, it is frustrating doing this kind of thing and seeing the things that we have and people say, oh, it's all fake because of things like that. And, you know, potentially the things you've said, too. Even, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren have been disproven many times. Even, you know, causing more problems in the real Conjuring house that really did have and maybe continues to have a demonic presence or a malicious presence, you know, with what they tried to do. So it's just such a shame when people try to take away from how special this actually is and the amount of respect that people such as myself have doing this kind of investigating. Yeah. And it just really kind of tarnishes what we try so hard to do and dedicate our lives to. So I am really interested in that. I think you said it was Dolly, the things on the wall. I looked it up while you were talking about it, and it just seems really neat. So I definitely want to look into that some more, too, because that I'm actually interested in. But it's just so difficult when, you know, oh, it's been proven they were throwing dishes. It's been proven they were faking. And it's like, okay, well, we're not doing that. So that's what's frustrating about that whole part of Poltergeist and investigating.
Right. And by the way, Ed and Lorraine Warren do not look like Patrick Wilson and...
No, they don't.
No,
not at all.
They do not.
No, not even a little bit.
Not even a little. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Ed and Lorraine Warren fans. They don't. Look at a picture and you'd be very disappointed.
Yes, you would.
I don't believe in them either. I'm going to do a story on that. I have a couple of my podcast friends who are like, no, they're being smeared and other things. I'm like, I don't know why you would do that right now. Why wouldn't you just say, I don't know. But from what I've read of mostly, they were very, not the greatest. But again, who knows? Maybe someone is putting stuff out there now that is not nice, but I can't find out the reason why you would do that.
Yeah.
Because they're not making any money off the Conjuring movies now. They're
right.
Not. They're dead.
Yep. Yeah.
Unless they're ghosts are, I have no idea. So just one thing, just really quickly, that's what I thought was really interesting is, like I said before, most of the people think it's because of stress. You're going to a dark place that these poltergeists feed off of you. Nobody's really sure. But one of the things they say is, and I thought this was really interesting too, is a psychokinesis. So if you're familiar with psychokinesis, it's kind of this mental energy that affects your physical environment. And then a phenomenon is attributed. So you're almost like putting this power out and creating spirits or ghosts or poltergeists or whatever you want to say. And some people are psychokinetic that they can use it for, like, if they want to mess with some people. If this is proven, I don't think so. But some people have that ability where they can, it's been in a lot of horror movies where someone could, like, put into your head and, like, make your brain explode or something like that. I don't know, right? But a lot of people think it's spirits of the dead and they're trying to communicate and have an intelligent and meaningful conversation. Nobody's really clear. A lot of people misinterpret it because they're not really sure exactly again, and they have an interactive a perception of it. And, you know, they have all these different things, you know, of trying to figure out how this works. And one of the things they found out too was there's this in this museum in the British Manchester Museum, and it's like what they call the curse of the spinning Egyptian, and it's an Egyptian statue in the Manchester Museum which appears to turn itself on during the day, and no one really knows how it's doing that. It just turns itself on, and a lot of people think, well, maybe it's some minor seismic activities throwing it off. Maybe there's something with it but it's like, it's not like someone built it. It's from, they caught it in the pyramids. It's, you know, come on, it's centuries old. Like, how does this thing work? And it's still from time to time we'll do this and no one can figure out what's going on. It's just a statue and it starts spinning and everybody be like, okay, why is it doing? A lot of people attribute it to maybe a pharaoh or somebody like that messing with it. So that's it, Megan. You know, a lot of different things associated with it. I went through it kind of fairly quickly, but Do you think you want to see a poltergeist now?
I mean, yeah, like that's partially why I do this. You know, I'd prefer they not like break my things or wake me up at night. Yeah. But you know, if I'm doing an investigation, yeah, totally. Like move that chair or, you know, open that door, you know, if mm-hmm. it's not right. home, I'm all for that. So I definitely want to see a poltergeist, not a malicious one because yeah. that's not cool either, but you know, yeah. whatever the spirits want to show me, I'm ready to receive, as long as it's positive in the most part.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend before you go into investigation, listen to a happy song, Megan, and like, you know, look at puppies and kitties playing together. So you're in a good mood.
Yeah.
When you go into investigation, just, I would highly recommend not to go on it when you've had a crappy day and mm-hmm. you just go on it because I have a feeling it might do something that I don't want it to happen to you. So yes. let's not do that, okay?
Always go into investigations in the right mind frame and bring yeah. your sage to sage yourself after and tell the spirits they cannot come with you. That is extremely important. Personally, I usually say the Lord's Prayer after doing an investigation, sure. so that also helps in my mind. And whatever works for you to keep you know, those spirits from attaching themselves.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Meg, this has been awesome. Like I said, I love talking to you. You're awesome. You have all these great attitude about things. And I love that you've just been doing it a year and you're just, this is the love of it. And I look forward to hearing more stories. And I'd love to have you on maybe later sometime to talk about some more investigations you did, especially with the Arcadia Opera House. Something similar to there would be awesome.
Yes. Likewise. Thank you so much, John. It was such a pleasure speaking with you, and I'd be honored to come back again.
Oh, thank you so much. So anything before we wrap up, anything you guys are working on right now? Is there any investigation you guys are going on in the near future or doing a live YouTube or whatever?
Yeah, next week we will be at the Seven Sisters Bed and Breakfast in Ocala, Florida, and it is a historic home. That's now been turned into a B&B. So we will definitely be having some footage, some pictures uploaded after our visit there. And I'm extremely excited to see what we get from that place.
Well, I would definitely share them on all my sites. And I will let you know when this episode drops so you can share it with all your friends and followers. And, you know, make sure they don't have any poltergeists, hopefully. But we end every show by saying two things. We always say hi to your ghost. So hello, ghost.
Hi, ghost.
And then we say stay spooky.
Oh, stay spooky.
Thanks, Meg. You have a great day.
Thanks, John.
Have a great night.
Bye. You too. Bye.